All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Alex, and welcome back to On Air with Dan and Alex. Pleased to have you join us every Wednesday. Guys, I am absolutely just delighting in this recording right now because Dan, naturally, believe it or not, quite an introvert, despite being a YouTuber and having a camera in his face for you know, most of his days, Dan is naturally quite introverted, and we are here recording the podcast. He's got a load of passengers walking in to the lounge that he sat in at Taipei's airport in Taiwan. So if you keep seeing him glance to the corner, it's because he's questioning his very existence in life and why he does the podcast, dying of awkwardness because God knows what I'm going to want to discuss right in the episode. And he's naturally going to have to respond, and they're all listening.
You know, it's always ironic how I'm the one who ends up in these types of situations when the truth is we would never see you sacrifice and sit in a public airline lounge doing this. If it was between no episode or sitting in a crowded airline lounge, there would be no episode. But here I am.
That's not
making
true.
Making a sacrifice for the greater good. And also,
I have definitely...
can I just... Go. I need to make a call back to the... all the times we've spoken about those telephone booths in airports that
yeah,
we say, what are
what
those useless little prisons? Well, it turns out they don't exist here. The one time I wish I had one. So here I am sitting in the Cathay Pacific Lounge in Taipei.
Well, firstly, let's just take in where you are, right? So you're sitting in the Cathay Lounge. You've got a presumably fake banana plant behind you. Or is it real? I hope it's real. But it looks a bit too shiny to be.
No, it is real. Oh my gosh.
It's real.
It's real. Yeah.
Okay, that's nice. Okay, kudos to Cathay. Okay, yeah. I like that. That's good.
And there's beautiful, not orchids, but some beautiful flower all along the windows. So
wonderful. 2 minutes in and we've got company. Let's see. What's the gentleman going to choose? Here we go. What's he going for? Is it the Schweppes?
Okay. You know what? Not everyone is watching us on video.
Okay, so. Right. He's gone. Yeah, for anyone that's not listening to us via YouTube and is listening on the Spotify platforms or elsewhere, we are in vision and Dan is in the lounge and I'm just taking delight in the awkwardness of other passengers kind of wondering what's going on. There's another one now who's just picking up a plate to start eating.
And by the way, you know, there will be background noise today. This will not be like a typical podcast. They have board announcements in this lounge.
Don't worry.
But I feel like if there's ever going to be background noise, airport lounge background noise is pretty appropriate. So.
Exactly. I think one time we even discussed maybe artificially adding it, given it went so well with the podcast. So you're fine and you're covered. And the only thing I can relate is one time I had to come on and do breaking news on the European networks. Or actually, I think I was with CNN. And I can't remember what the story was. I was doing it live from the Brussels Airlines loft lounge in Brussels. And literally during the podcast, a woman came over to me while I'm on and was tapping me on the shoulder, asking me, what are you talking to? Or what are you talking? And I was like, just ignoring her. And then while the anchor asked me a question, I gently, politely said to her, madam, I'm broadcasting on the news, if you just wouldn't mind. Firstly, what kind of psychopath interrupts anyone's meeting? Never mind if you hear that it sounds like someone's on, you know, some kind of broadcast.
Yeah, well, here in Taiwan, people are civilized and they would not interrupt even this on-air recording, let alone the news. So we don't have to worry about that.
Well, we look at our statistics. On-air is pretty big in Taiwan, so that's good. And across a lot of Asia, we're pleased to have
We love Taiwan on-air. I love everything about Taipei Airport, the lounges here. It's all like you were actually so shocked when we were texting because I landed about an hour ago, and then 5 minutes later I go, hi, I'm in the lounge. You go, what, didn't you just touch down? And then I managed to disembark, go through transit security, and get to the lounge.
just crazy. Beautifully, beautifully efficient. And you sent me, so Dan sent me, guys, his flight number so that I could just, you know, track to be aware that when he would land during that brief transit, we're going to record the episode. And so when I saw the aircraft on final approach, you were about 2,000 feet or so, I thought, okay, 45 minutes to an hour, and then we'll record. Literally, like 8 minutes later, you're asking me if I'm ready to record. I was like, that is efficient. How was your flight in? I noticed that you were on a Malaysia 330 with a special Visit Malaysia livery, right?
I know, and the livery is brand new. It was just painted on, and like the aircraft returned to service the middle of January, so it's been a month. Nice. But I was like, first I was like, okay, cool. But then I realized the aircraft had been in storage for like 6 months before that. And I know that you, so I am totally fine with Malaysia Airlines. I know that maybe you feel like a tiny little bit of hesitation about Malaysia.
I think I told you there's no hesitation, right? And they are a respected, safe carrier. There's no hesitation whatsoever. The funny relationship I have with them, I would say, is because, and I've mentioned this on the podcast before, I was so invested, and so I was covering, you know, those two MH unfortunate events, 370 and 17, so in depth for such an extensive period of time that naturally it's all I can still associate Malaysia Airlines with, which is sad because they are an accomplished, safe carrier since.
Yeah.
And you know, but that's just my kind of funny relationship with Malaysia Airlines, and that's a very me thing, not anything that anyone else should take on.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was an amazing flight. I was very tired because of jet lag, so I slept like 2.5 hours, which is very unlike me to sleep on a daytime flight. But lovely, the crew was so lovely. So yeah, I'm really happy, and now I'm, you know, in an amazing lounge. So all is good. And I'm excited to get into the news with you. Although something not very nice was in the headlines when I woke up.
We start off today by discussing what on earth happened at Toronto. I mean, this is, you know, I don't understand what the common theme is here, guys, in terms of us having to start the episode with what happened in North America this week involving an aircraft. But sadly, this is somehow the pattern that we're in. It's been a very unusual start for commercial aviation to 2025, that's for sure.
Yes.
And in the latest chapter of this sequence of unusual events, we have a Delta flight operated by Endeavour Air. That's the wholly owned regional subsidiary of Delta. So this is a Delta flight. It's the CRJ-900 coming in for what should have been a normal approach to Toronto's Pearson Airport. The aircraft was coming in from Minneapolis, and something happened in the final moments of the touchdown. We are not clear yet what it was, but the authorities, at the moment, the only thing they've said is that potentially wind shear has played a role in this. But to tell you guys basically what we know, and the only thing that we do know, is that the aircraft, when it did come to a full stop, it was upside down. It had inverted, it had rolled over onto its back. And so, and also the wings were essentially broken off on both sides with severe damage to the tail too. Absolutely shocking images of this CRJ on its back, upside down, came to a full stop. Thankfully, everyone evacuating safely, all passengers and crew. This was insane.
That's the remarkable news of all this, that everyone made it out. Because when I saw those photos, I was like, at first I couldn't even figure out what was going on. Like, what is this I'm looking at? You know, no wings, upside down. Absolutely incredible that everyone survived. Also, something that sticks out to me is the fact that there aren't videos of this circulating everywhere. We even had a video of the Azerbaijan Airlines incident in rural Kazakhstan. Yet here we are at one of the busiest airports in North America in the middle of daytime, and we haven't seen video footage yet, which I find really surprising.
Well, have you seen the CCTV footage of the aircraft in a distance coming in for on approach?
No.
So this only surfaced in the last hour, so that's probably why, because you've been airborne. But there is now CCTV footage. It is from a greater distance. It's very unclear, but you can see the aircraft coming in for its final approach. You can see it touching down what looks like a very hard touchdown. It then slightly veers to the right, and then you see smoke, you see dust, you see snow being thrown up into the air, ice, everything, and then not a lot more. When it did come to its full stop, thankfully, there was no fire by the time it was it had stopped. It was perfectly upside down, as we said, extraordinary and bizarre as well. Missing wings, essentially, tail severely damaged. And then the doors opening and the passengers evacuating. And you imagine, this is an aircraft that they had boarded, you know, normally, taken their seats, stowed away their overhead, their bags in the overhead locker and so on. And they're now upside down. And the footage has come out of passengers crawling on the ceiling space of the aircraft and exiting. And when they are exiting and they're stepping outside, they're turning back and looking at the aircraft, and they are in complete and utter shock that that's what they were just in. Now, the shock, Dan, of everyone when they leave the video and looking back leads me to think that a lot of them, perhaps it happened so quickly, were not so aware of what they'd just been involved in. And if I always think of the, do you remember the British Airways 777 accident at Heathrow, BA38 from Beijing? Big kind of 777 incident. And thankfully, everyone was fine. Those passengers as well, when they had left, they looked back, they were shocked what they had been involved in, because they thought they were in a hard landing. News reporters went up to these guys on their Delta flight and they said, you know, it was really hard, and then they don't really understand what happened after that.
Yeah.
Just
because it must have been such a vibe, you just have no idea what's going on.
Yeah.
And let alone the fact that on US carriers, this brings us back to a point we've discussed before, you don't need to open your window shades for landing.
Right.
So presumably...
So true.
And maybe half the cabin had their window shades closed. Next thing they know, they're up hanging from the ceiling. Like, I just can't even imagine what that was like. But then have you seen the videos that someone took a video of when they were evacuating in the aircraft upside down?
Yes.
So you see them walking.
Yeah,
and going out.
That kind
you
of crawling through, aren't they? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And you see some people, of course, as always, we see in the West, people taking their hand luggage with them, which is like, come on. The aircraft is, I mean, of course, you don't know what's going to happen, but when you're outside,
but
see
they
it's
don't
fine.
Know. That's the,
you'll be able
that's
to,
the crucial bit, isn't it? They don't know in that moment if the aircraft is about to go up in flames or not. So really, you're going to waste 5 to 10 seconds grabbing something that can be replaced, like a laptop or a phone or, you know.
Yeah, it's so that's just always so infuriating in these situations. But we should be happy that in an incident that looks so extreme, everything actually ended up being so much better than you could have expected. So we're thankful for that. And I'm personally thankful the Canadian authorities will be the principal authorities investigating this to try to determine what happened.
Right, and that's, of course, because it has taken place in Toronto. So despite the NTSB assisting, and also the new Secretary of Transportation has been very active in trying to show that he's, you know, taking a lead with it, they have to comply with international aviation law and the ICAO annexes that state that because this has happened in Toronto, Canada will be leading the investigation. The fuselage, let's talk about the aircraft, right? So it's a narrow regional aircraft anyway. It's kind of tight. I mean, for example, I imagine someone like you boarding a CRJ. I don't think you can stand up straight, can you?
No, I'm ducking.
See, these are smaller regional aircraft. And that, I think, would potentially add to the scariness of it for passengers being upside down in such a confined space.
Well, I was actually thinking it's a benefit because when I was even on the A330, I just flew... Given that I read this news this morning before I took off, I was thinking about what would happen if you're upside down here, because the ceiling is higher. But can you imagine on, let's say you're somewhere without overhead lockers or on an A380, something with a very high ceiling, and suddenly you're hanging from the top, strapped in with your seatbelt, and somehow you need to get down, but your head is the thing that's hanging down. So how are you supposed to get down to what is now the floor?
That's a valid point.
Without
that's
hurting really yourself on a CRJ, yeah. You're literally right there. So you're not going to fall very far. Of course, I think this situation, you wouldn't really find a situation where you have an E380 that's flipped, of course. Mm. And perhaps, you know, part of what I picture here, if the aircraft did veer to the side and the wing was hit and then it sort of flipped, because the CRJ has its engines mounted in the back, there's no engines to absorb the impact as there would be on most other aircraft.
True.
To sort of stabilize it and prevent it from flipping. So that could be a consideration. And this is all 100% non-expert.
You are giving your thoughts while you yourself were sat in an aircraft cabin looking at the footage of all of this. I saw a few comments on Twitter saying, can we make everything what they make a CRJ out of, the fuselage yes. material, because of course it's kind of perfectly intact and fine considering it's been involved in something crazy. Yeah, one thing I will say, and I wasn't looking at this from a safety point of view, but it's just something that's been popping up on my radar for the last week, is actually Canadian airports like Toronto and Montreal have to go through at this time of year, and how the impact on airlines. I've been very aware over the last 10 days of several airlines that have been forced, like all airlines operating in that winter environment, to have lengthy delays, passengers missing connections elsewhere in the world and so on, because of the snow, heavy snowfall, the winds, the gusts. It's very, very challenging wintry conditions. Nothing that the Canadians are not used to. I mean, they're, you know, super accomplished in this field. But even for Canada, there's been a lot of lengthy delays because the weather has been quite bad. The only thing we know, as I mentioned earlier, is that they are assuming, the authorities are saying that it is likely wind shear has played a role in this. Not that passengers now have to be worried about flying in to anywhere on wintry conditions. These are, you know, it's winter somewhere in the world, for a big portion of the world, every day. And and aviation continues as normal. It's business as normal. So, yeah. The only thing, Dan, before we wrap up on this topic of the Delta incident, because it's very early days and there's not really much else to say other than we're thankful that everyone seems to be out fine. Unfortunately, there are reports of injuries, and we hope that they are only minor and that they can recover quickly. The statement that Delta released as soon as the incident had happened. Well, it wasn't as soon as the incident had happened. It was around 45 minutes to an hour, which is quite late for a response for a major airline. They said, quote, Delta is aware of reports of Endeavour flight 4819 from Minneapolis to Toronto as involved in an incident. We are working to confirm any details. The bit that I saw the difference with the American incident in DC a few weeks ago is that American were very, very quick at responding. I mean, it was within 15 minutes. They not explaining what had happened, not providing answers, but owning the fact that an American Airlines aircraft has been involved in an accident and they are sending a team now to find out, you know, to further developments. It was textbook crisis communications 101 in terms of how an airline should do it, right? They also immediately, in the first statement, in order to bring clarity to the situation, explained that although this was technically and contractually a PSA flight, the regional subsidiary of American Airlines, they explained this is a wholly owned division of American Airlines and therefore this was an American Airlines flight, leaving no confusion. Going forward, it was constantly referred to by both the media, government officials and the public as American flight XYZ, because that's what it was, right? Passengers were not booking with PSA. This is a contractual thing in order to be able to.
Them directly.
You can't book with PSA, as you said, and this is purely contractual in order for airlines to be clever with scooping up years ago a regional carrier where they get to pay less in terms of salaries and packages, different union standards, and so on, right? For Delta to say immediately, Delta is aware of reports of Endeavour Flight 4819. Let's be clear. This was a Delta flight. Endeavour, similarly to the American example I just gave, is a 100% wholly owned subsidiary of Delta Airlines. They operate under the Delta brand. They are staffed. Everything about it is Delta, right? it just follows that same contractual thing from years ago when they scooped up this regional carrier. So I just thought that I felt, some people disagreed with me, and that's absolutely fine. We're in a free and open society, but I felt that this was that first tiny attempt to potentially shape the narrative going forward in referring to it as an Endeavour flight rather than a Delta flight, which would do a little more damage to the Delta brand, despite the fact these photos are everywhere and everyone can see that it's a Delta aircraft and that these passengers have not booked with Endeavour. These passengers have booked with Delta. So I didn't like that. The second thing is I didn't like is that when they said is aware of reports of this blah, blah, blah. Let's be clear. At that moment in time, Delta, responsible for their aircraft globally, had triggered their emergency response in their IOC center, the international operations, the integrated operations, sorry, where they're, you know, that first line of response as an airline. The tweet made it sound like they were aware of footage they'd seen on Twitter, you know, or on X, rather than the American stance in it, American Airlines, which completely owned it from the beginning in order to provide clarity for the public.
Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying. At least I see all the media is referring to it as a Delta flight. So Delta can try to
because
brush it
is
off if they want. Yeah. Yes, it is a Delta flight. So yeah, I think that's strange. But at this point, I do really wonder what the American flying public is thinking, especially people who are a bit more scared of flying, because even if this is entirely related to weather, there's no air traffic control or pilot incident, stuff like that, it's still, we now have American Airlines, the following days, a crash of that medical flight in Philadelphia. Then we have the flight in Alaska a few weeks ago that unfortunately killed everyone on board, and now this. So 2025 is really shaping up to be a bad year for U.S. aviation. We hope it stops here.
We've gone through these before, haven't we? These periods before, years ago, where it's like a few months of what is happening, and social media definitely makes it worse. But it isn't. This is an unusual sequence that is emerging. It's for no apparent reason, and air travel is incredibly safe globally. And then again, as we discussed last week, we had all the politicization. Sorry, there we go. We had all the politicization of the circumstance.
People
kind of claiming that look what has happened after just a few days of Trump, and this is what happens when you get rid of Buttigieg, and oh, this is what happens because of DER and all this, you know, all this stuff that should be left out of it, because guess what? When it comes to aviation safety, those political, you know, weaponry tools that work elsewhere in politics are not relevant in the safe and continued running of commercial operations. So, yeah, a bit of an unusual one again, but we'll bring you any developments perhaps in next week's episode if we find out a little bit more about what happened in Toronto with this flight. Excuse me, my phone was ringing.
we will. Our next topic is slightly more positive news, which is always fun. Do you want to introduce us?
Sure. So this is coming to you fresh off of the press right now, hot off the press. It is that the Australian Competition and Watchdog Authorities, who are really the ones that are going to shape whether or not Qatar Airways is going to be able to take that stake in Virgin Australia, but not really specifically about the stake, but about the deal, the nature of the deal, and be able to operate with a wet lease arrangement with an Australian carrier in order to have Virgin Australia return to long-haul operations and to have Qatar Airways gain greater market access into Australia. So the news is that the Aussie Competition and Consumer Watchdog has given their initial verdict. They are happy with the major partnership deal between Virgin Australia and Qatar. This coming to you today from the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, the ACCC, announcing that it proposes to grant both airlines permission to, quote, engage in cooperative conduct under an integrated alliance for 5 years minimum. So under this deal, Virgin Australia will wet lease Qatar Airways aircraft. So Virgin Australia will not be staffing these aircraft. And this is the difference between a wet lease and a dry lease. A wet lease, if I'm... let's make it really simple. I have an airline and Dan has an airline. Alex Airlines
I like
and
this
Dan
example.
Air. Do you remember Dan Air of London? I don't know
yeah,
if you...
I prefer not to remember them, but...
yeah. Anyway, so I need a few more aircraft. And so I have the option to dry lease from Dan. So Dan offers me his 5 A330s. And if we
hey,
conduct
why do
a
I have
dry
A330s?
Lease...
Can I have A350s?
No. You aspire to have A350s. But can we get back to the example, please?
Anyway, well, you only have 737 MAXs. So at least
I have 350s. Okay. And I'm settling
no,
for less.
Don't. Why do you need
because
my
of the lack of available aircraft? Because there's a shortage to the supply chain. Have you seen what's going on with Spirit Aerosystems? Okay. No, hold on. I will not let you derail us. No. Okay. Anyway, so to go back to the example. So I can enter a dry lease agreement with Dan Air, and that means that Dan will provide me his aircraft under a leasing agreement that stipulates that I will be staffing the aircraft ultimately with flight crew, cabin crew, engineers. Basically, all he's providing me with is the aircraft itself. And there are some couple other little extras, but we don't need to go into it. In a wet lease arrangement, I am deciding that Dan will provide me the aircraft, crew, and often maintenance and insurance, ACMI, in order for me to absorb his whole kind of operations based on this specific aircraft into my operations, and he flies the route for me. So if I'm flying, for example, non-stop daily from, I don't know, Gothenburg to Honolulu, right? If the flight is operated by Dan Air under a wet lease agreement, it means that my passengers, despite being ticketed by Alex Airlines, despite being contractually promised to fly from A to B by Alex Airlines, I release that burden onto Dan Air, and Dan operates the flight for me with his aircraft, his crew, his maintenance, and his insurance. And that's a wet lease agreement. It happens all over the world, and this is what Qatar want to enter with Virgin Australia.
Yeah, just to give another example that's not aviation, like let's say we both had cleaning companies. So if I were the dry lease example would be I just give you, so I'm trying to help you. So dry lease would be I give you my cleaning supplies and you do the cleaning. Wet lease would be you actually make me do the cleaning with my supplies and it's just under your name. That's it.
Yeah. And I think we all know as listeners to the podcast as to what one I would be choosing for in the cleaning example, what one I would be choosing. Anyway, so that's the wet lease agreement. And basically it means that this is the initial tick of agreement, but it does seem to set to be going ahead. And flights are now already on sale. When you book these flights, there is a tiny little caveat underneath, and it says subject to government approval. But it is widely expected that this will go through because of the whole saga that we discussed many, many, many episodes ago about the lack of competition in Australia, about the kind of mafia accusations when it came to the top tier of Qantas and the Australian government at the time and so on. So the new flights to from Sydney and also from Brisbane and Perth that will fly to Doha, and then passengers will connect onto Qatar Airways flights to the rest of the world or other oneworld carriers, will begin in June. So those flights are already on sale. Now, I've spoken to many people in my DMs on Instagram who have just checked with me. Do you think this is going ahead? Do you think this is safe to book? And it is, and your money is safe, because in the very unlikely scenario that this deal didn't go ahead, your money will be returned to you anyway. So you're kind of covered there. But
or you might be rebooked on other Qatar frequencies, perhaps, right?
Exactly. The deal is now is that you can go on to Virgin Australia and you can book flights to Europe for what the Aussies love, that Europe summer, right? And they and if you go on to Virgin Australia, they're selling these flights from, let's say, Sydney to Doha, and then your connection will be Doha to Athens, for example. It's a Virgin Australia flight, but it's entirely operated by Qatar Airways. That is the deal that is set to be going ahead, and another green light for that deal this morning.
Yeah, it's so exciting. I mean, just this morning in Kuala Lumpur, I saw a Turkish Airlines A350 take off, not to Istanbul, but to Sydney from Kuala Lumpur. So, you know, we're seeing more and more. They also fly from Singapore to Melbourne. They're aiming to launch direct flights to Australia. Yeah. I think there are quite a few ongoing conversations at European airlines about at least launching flights to Perth, because Qantas seems to be doing quite well with those. They now fly to Paris, Rome, and London at certain times of year, at least from Perth. So Australia is in desperate need of this connectivity, getting prices down. So yeah, it's just super exciting, and especially for people to be able to fly more Qatar Airways flights when, you know, presumably that would be a lot better than Virgin Australia operating those flights, although Virgin Australia back in the day I hear was great. So yeah, all around good news, and we hope they go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's definitely in the interest of the consumer, because Australia is just, you know, it's increasingly a difficult landscape in terms of the competition. They've lost many carriers. We have the ever-rising dominance of Qantas, and fares have been higher in Australia than the rest of the world for a longer period of time. They still throw about blame to the pandemic and COVID, and it's like, okay guys, but it's 2025, so that is no longer, you know, relevant. Yes, there are supply chain issues and whatever, but when you're able to secure such cheap fares right now from the likes of South Korea and Singapore, then there really is no excuse for what is happening down under in terms of the high fares for consumers.
Yeah. And, you know, Qantas will say that, oh, but a 17-hour flight from the UK, for example, to Perth is very expensive. We need to charge these obscene prices. But then you look at Singapore Airlines on their New York to Singapore route, the longest route in the world. And sometimes you can get premium economy round trip on that flight, premium economy for $900 or $1,000 on the world's longest flight. Good luck finding that on Qantas, even one way between London and Perth. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, they've really emerged over recent years. I think it's the pandemic kind of fueled it, but the way in which they price up their fares, and and also, there has been this feeling, there's such a disconnect between Qantas and the Aussie flying public, as if Qantas just doesn't give a damn if the passengers choose to continue to fly Qantas going forward. It's not been a good few years for the airline, and I would say it's entirely self-inflicted. They have ruined the feeling that loyal passengers enjoyed on the Aussie state carrier, and not a good look.
Aussies used to be so proud of Qantas. That's what's sad. It used to really be the spirit of Australia. In a way, it reminds me, it kind of mirrors the, quote, decline of British Airways in a way, because I think Brits used to always also be very proud of BA. They've just been a few years ahead, with people getting more and more upset and more disappointed. And now, unfortunately, Qantas is following that same path. So,
yeah, you're right. Well, this leads me into a little tidbit that somebody asked me about, and I had the answer to, and he said to me, my God, you should explain that on the podcast. He said, because I don't think people are aware. And then I thought, I wonder if Dan is aware. Nothing revolutionary, but it is the type of thing that I know you might blow your mind and kind of change the way that you see flight numbers going forward. So there is a global pattern that most airlines adhere to, and I was interested to learn how few people realize this. So I wanted to give you some examples. People are wondering what on earth I'm talking about. I'm about to start explaining. So
can you just can you just try to quiz to see if I know any of the answers?
Because
obviously
good
I
idea.
Know there's patterns and stuff, but I don't obviously
what
know
are the
correct
answer. What are the patterns in flight numbers that you are aware of?
Like, I mean, first of all, flight numbers are airline specific. So I know that most airlines will, let's say Lufthansa designates certain flight numbers to certain continents. So like Lufthansa's 400XX flight numbers go to North America, and then 800s go to Scandinavia, stuff like that. So different airlines will have different ways of designating regions like that. Then of course, different airlines will, so like, for example, today I was on Malaysia Airlines. So flights leaving their hub have even numbers. Flights coming back will have odd numbers.
Okay, so I want to pick you up on that. Do you think that's in a Malaysia Airlines thing about leaving the hub? Or do you think it could be something a bit broader.
Well, so I know that some airlines twist it. That's what's weird. So maybe it's region specific, but I swear,
but
I have been
on
airlines where it's okay. So this is actually a rule.
So for example, British Airways on some flight twist it. It's unusual. The higher number is the one on the outbound, right? Which is the unusual bit. But okay, generally speaking, most airlines, okay, odd numbered flights are generally westbound that way. Okay. So
which
let's
mine
think
was not
about
today. Mine was eastbound.
Yeah, well.
So, sorry.
Malaysia.
Do you have anything that's true to teach us?
No. This is true for most carriers. I can't speak of your shady domestic flight now. No, it wasn't domestic. It was regional. Okay.
Regional.
No, it was regional. I thought you were within. Right. So
anyway,
you're not in Langkawi, are you? No, you're in Taipei. You know. Okay. So, for example, odd numbered flights are generally westbound. Okay. This is true of most. For example, Singapore to Hong Kong, that's an eastbound flight, and they fly against it as well, but that's because it's regional. When you look at the wider picture internationally, okay, let's say QR3. QR3 is going from Doha to London. It's an A380. It takes the designation of 3 because it's going westbound. On the eastbound return, most eastbound flights are generally assigned even numbers. This is true as well when you fly across the Atlantic from London to New York and the flight number is designated as, for example, 1, let's say like VS1 or any of the flagship routes, forget New York, but any of the flagship routes is kind of 1 westbound, 2 eastbound. There are examples of this where it doesn't follow a clear pattern, but generally, internationally, it does. So when you look at, for example, when you look at on the outbounds leaving Europe, even numbers are used mostly either for the eastbound, as we said, or for the return. Odd numbers for the westbound or the outbound. When you zoom in on the smaller, more local flights, domestic flights, and whatever, they forget about east and west and north and south and are primarily following the odd number on the outbound, the even number on the inbound. And that would be true of your flight today, right?
No, it's the opposite. Wait, even number on the outbound.
Odd number.
I think you did.
Even number. No, even number
out of the hub.
No, even number coming back into the hub.
Okay, well, that's today I had an even number. But I think maybe Asia seems to be, because Cathay.
The exception.
Yeah,
because Europe seems to follow this pretty well. Yeah. So, for example, the flights between Sydney and Los Angeles, okay? Sydney to LA, QF11 on Qantas.
Yeah.
Coming back, QF12. And we've spoken before about how airlines designate. So, when I was looking into this, I was thinking, okay, then I wanted to see what airlines designate numbers for the different regions of the world. You, off the top of your head, were able to know exactly what Lufthansa do for. So let's look at Air Canada, right? Premium long haul flagship routes.
No,
premium long haul flagship routes. These are the premium routes are assigned the coolest flight numbers in terms of Air Canada 1 and 2 is Toronto to Tokyo, 3 and 4 Vancouver to Tokyo, 7 and 8 Vancouver and Hong Kong, 15 and 16 Toronto, Hong Kong, Vancouver, Sydney, 33 and 34. But then as you start to look regionally, North America flights, 200 and something. Latin America and the Caribbean, 300 and something. Short-haul Canada and regional, 400 and something. And it goes on and on. Singapore operate in a similar way. When you look at how they fly around Europe, it's
that's
mostly the
200s, right? If I can guess.
300s.
Okay. Without checking, I'm still happy with
Amsterdam,
that guess.
324 and 325. Paris, 336 and 335. Copenhagen, 352. So you get the idea. 200s, right. The Australian routes, SQ211, SQ217. Mm. So airlines kind of designate it. But most of them, again, when I'm looking, following this pattern of odd and even, except the Asian carriers. Yeah, you're right. Except many of the Asian carriers. That's interesting.
So
I wonder why they didn't.
Yeah, interesting exception here. But no, it's so fun to nerd out about this stuff. But I have to say, what I find even more satisfying is when airlines have very clear, very logical registration numbers, like Qatar Airways. Nothing is more satisfying than
like
the
what?
Way they assign their numbers. So A7, the country code, but then the yeah. first letter designates if it's a Boeing or an Airbus at Qatar Airways. So we have A or true. B. And then yeah. the next letter, if it's a freighter, it will be F. So then you yeah. know immediately if it's a BF, you know it's a Boeing freighter
Boeing,
or AF,
yeah.
Airbus freighter, which they don't have. And then you just need to learn what the different number or letters after that stand for. So A, Airbus, and then you know it's M. Okay, then it's a A350-900, and we happen to know that all of those have Q suite. And then AL yeah. is also A350-900. Only a couple of those have Q suite, the rest are not. So you can learn to read it so easily once you know what each number stands for. Meanwhile,
yeah.
you go to the US and it's just N, blah, 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 random number, number, with literally
like a car
no logic.
Registration.
Yeah. And you check United's upcoming deliveries, for example, of consecutive 737 MAXs, but then
yeah.
the registration numbers are completely unrelated.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
so unsatisfying. But yeah, when an airline, I mean, also, for example, Emirates, theirs is way more complicated, at least to me, but you can also learn to read it. British Airways, quite easy. I think people know how to read that. G, V, whatever, whatever.
Yeah.
And then we have Virgin Atlantic, which has a lot of fun with its registrations.
True.
Because every registration is an abbreviation for something. So sometimes you'll
yeah.
see something and you'll be like, what? And then you'll realize the registration is an abbreviation for Sir Richard Branson, SRB.
Yeah, or like
SRB,
sexy.
For example. Yeah, 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 SXY. It's,
yeah.
yeah, it's like GV for Virgin, and then a three-letter abbreviation for whatever they're trying to
yeah.
accomplish. But yeah, it's
right.
just, it's
right.
entertaining once you learn to read it.
Aviation is full of these weird little patterns that, well, we've discovered today, but a lot of Asia doesn't follow, but
yeah.
but most of the world do, and especially for the big global carriers. The bit we didn't discuss last week, I want to quickly get your take. What do you think about the fact that with Riyadh Air being delayed, and the only thing they can really come to us with is like the new music and things like this, we still haven't even seen the cabin. I mean, did you think that by we're fast approaching March 2025, we would have known what this airline was going to look like on the inside, considering they were supposed to start flights in around May time that has now been pushed so
yeah.
further down the line?
Well, you know, I think it's good to learn from the mistakes of Lufthansa and wait a little bit rather than announce something and then end up,
and
oops, we launched 5 years later and now this is an outdated product. Better to
yeah.
know what your launch date is and then
yeah.
reveal your product, because I know their whole thing was they wanted to build hype and they constantly want to have things to keep us excited, which is hard now, I understand, when they're delayed. They released the boarding music, you know, but I don't blame them at all for waiting. I think that's more respectable than trying to make a big splash, reveal it, and then people won't be able to fly it for years, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that's a valid point. And look, if you know, most established airlines are unable to introduce an extra aircraft into their fleets at the moment because of the supply chain shortage. I was reading a report last night that suggests that Airbus is going to be unable to increase A350 a ramp up in production, and it's all because of the issues, not specifically with Airbus, but with our supplier, one of their key suppliers, Spirit. The suppliers are having
Spirit.
A difficult time. They're having a very difficult time, and as a result, it is really restricting the breathing room that airlines have in terms of being able to grow the fleet. There are very few airlines that are in a very good position right now. I mean, most have just Finnair with Russian sanctions to the left of it are in a good position.
In that perspective, no. But when it comes to their fleet, they're loaded with A350s. They're,
yeah.
you know, their A330s are not being utilized very heavily. So
maybe they're going
major
to Qantas.
Airlines, yeah,
maybe
we discussed this, right? But
yeah.
you know, I think they're in a position that, from that perspective, that other airlines could envy. And then, of course, we have the likes of Lufthansa, which has,
yeah.
like, tons of 787s ready to be delivered, but they can't get their stuff together with Allegris to get it certified. Yeah. So all these 787s are sitting there with economy cabins, I think, fitted, but they won't be able to fly with business because it's not certified. So at this point, they're discussing whether or not they should just take them and not sell business class, only fly economy, which could be profitable during peak summer season at least.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just like, talk about two horrible situations combining: aircraft shortage plus having problems getting your seat certified. It's just
that's not great. You're sitting in the lounge now in Taipei. Which lounge are you in? Cathay.
Yeah.
And your next flight is in how long?
In 3 hours. So
you have quite a while. Will you stay in the lounge for these 3 hours?
No, because I've been checking my special app Happy Cow, which shows me different vegan restaurant
options
nearby.
Plant-based
restaurants, yeah. Yeah, and there's some in the terminal that I want to check out that might have some really nice Taiwanese food. I already ate in the lounge when I got here a couple hours ago, so I'm going to go out and see what other delicious stuff I can eat while I'm here.
And will you, I want to understand, I mean, will you go to the gate when it's, you know, go to gate, blah, 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 or will you only go when it's boarding? Will you go and check out how far it is and then come back?
Oh my gosh.
I know.
No.
Isn't that weird? I find that, apparently that's what most of the world do. If you believe social media, apparently most people find the gate and then they go back. I never do that.
That trend is wild. Like the fact you see reels with hundreds of thousands of likes, like you need to go to make sure your gate is real. I'm like, what a waste of time.
They might be at that point, they might be, you know, past the point of no return. So then unable to get back to where the shops or dining or lounges are.
That's true. That's true. No, I mean, what an unnecessary thing. Also, many airports don't announce the gate early enough for people to actually be able to go and then go back to do something else like Heathrow, because they want people to stay in the central area and shop and eat and whatever and not know where they're actually meant to end up. But airports that announce early, I mean, I trust those airports, and if it changes, you just keep an eye on the monitor, you'll be fine. The one thing is, we have spoken about this on the podcast, and I recently had a friend who had this situation. Remember, someone said that they got to their gate and they had changed the flight schedule without announcing it, like last minute, so the flight left earlier. Oh, and you thought this happened to me on Etihad, but it or like something like that might have happened, but and then you miss your flight. That's the only thing where I'm like, I've started not showing up to the gate last minute like I used to, because we've heard about this enough times now where I'm a bit like, okay, that is weird. And we didn't talk on the podcast, but I told you about my weird Etihad flight out of Bangalore and how every airline was changing the times within the 2 weeks before departure. Emirates, Oman Air, Etihad, they were all like multiple times within the weeks before departure. The flight, the departure time changed, but not just by a few minutes, by hours. I was close
to
booking.
Why? Did we ever get to the bottom of that?
We have no idea why. So if you're listening and you have any idea why this happens at Bangalore Airport, please tell us. Because, for example,
this was over January, right?
No, this was earlier this month, a couple weeks ago. So
Okay.
So, for example, this Oman Air flight I was looking at booking, it was supposed to leave at 3:30. I was eyeing it, 3:30. The week it was supposed to depart, suddenly it was at 1:30. Then this Etihad flight that I ended up taking, that was originally supposed to leave at 4:30. Then it was moved to 6:30, like 2 weeks before the flight. 1 week before the flight, it was moved to 5:50. So they're just shifting it back and forth. And I was thinking, you know, as I got to the airport, I wonder how many people here stayed up to date with those changes, because I didn't receive any emails about the second change. So about it, me being moved forward again. Very confusing situation, and I feel bad for anyone who, you know, doesn't obsessively check their bookings like I do.
I was going to say, or doesn't leverage technology and isn't, you know, connected with all the right apps in order to bring them those updates. It's true, there must be so many people that are caught out in those positions. The screens in the gallery's first lounge at Terminal 5, when I was traveling the other week, showed me the gate. It was the final gate of Terminal 5. So I think that's A28, 29, maybe. Anyway, in the late 20s. Thankfully, not A10. And I am in the lounge on the terrace bit, the outdoor bit. And it shows me the gate, but it doesn't say go to gate. And above, it had said, you know, boarding, go to gate, and then boarding and boarding. So it was kind of nothing. And I was like, I mean, I can see on the app that there's no delay, but we should definitely be boarding now. So I looked in the app and it said boarding. So I was like, okay. I looked at the screen again, nothing. So I said, let's go, because the app says boarding. And also we're like 20 minutes before departure now, so we must be boarding. Go downstairs, and of course, all the other screens downstairs say flight closing for this flight that I'm on.
No way.
And meanwhile, the screen outdoors on the gallery's first lounge, frozen or whatever, I don't know,
yeah,
just says nothing. And I'm then the last person to board. And there, what, she can see us coming in the distance. And she was like, quickly, please, quickly. And I said to her, there's the screen in the lounge says nothing. Doesn't even say that the gate is open for this flight. I only came because common sense, and also, you know, double checking the app. Was the last person on the aircraft, door closed behind me, and we pushed back. And I was thinking,
was this your super empty flight or no? The one you took to Spain, right? There was one with like 20 people. You were telling
no,
us.
No. This was to France.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and this was full. Had I had just been relying on that screen outside, I would have missed it.
And the crazy thing is, the airline wouldn't take responsibility for that. If you had been sitting there and you missed the flight, they would say, yeah, you need to check other mediums, which is like, I'm in your lounge. This is your responsibility to inform
I'm
me.
Not in a third party lounge. I'm also not relying on an announcement. I'm not, you know, I'm not someone that thinks that they have to personally announce every single flight. We know they don't do that anymore. But if you're in the British Airways lounge taking a British Airways flight and there's a screen showing the departures and clear, also had every other flight had also shown nothing, that would have been a bit more obvious that something is maybe wrong with that screen. But because the other flights were seemingly showing, you know, gate open, gate open and boarding, I'm like, okay, mine hasn't even switched to gate open yet. Never mind boarding. And then you go downstairs and all those other flights were also showing as flight closing. Again, it crossed my mind as I was speed walking there. Maybe it's that strategy, you know, where they just switch it to flight closing in order to make sure that you get there. But it wasn't at all. It was closing. I was the last person on the aircraft. Yeah.
Well, super glad you made it. I feel like this is a great segue into Q&A to answer some of your guys' questions. Okay, so I have a question here from Ethan. He says, hi guys, continuing to love the podcast. Thank you. I got your cheap departing cities guide that you sent out to people on your points master list, which you can still get. I'll try to put it in the show notes, actually, guys, just in case you don't have that, where I sent out a list of basically some of the cheapest cities to depart from in the world. And he said, I was fascinated to see just how cheap flights are out of Seoul. And we kind of hinted at this earlier in the episode as well. Why do you think that is? And why are some cities like Seoul so much cheaper than neighboring Japan? So that,
you take
that,
this one, because I literally asked you this yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, it is a fascinating question. And if you guys don't know, Seoul right now has emerged as like an unbelievably
cheap
spot for flights. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it comes down to a variety of factors. Their currency isn't really suffering, which is usually what we point to with, for example, Egypt. Whenever flights are suddenly incredibly cheap from there, it's because there is a problem with their currency or the conversion. But in the case of Seoul, I think partly, as we've seen, airlines have struggled there with first class, which suggests to me that it's not the most high yield premium market. And part of this, I think, comes down in recent days to the huge rise of low cost airlines in Korea, and specifically with the merger of Asiana and Seoul, or Asiana and Korean Air. The government has mandated that T-Way, which was traditionally just a regional low cost airline, start long-haul, low-cost flights in order to keep prices low and increase competition. So what they've done is they've acquired used A330s, and they'll even be acquiring Cathay 777s to operate to Europe this summer. And in doing that, they're offering business class prices that are almost unheard of. Like a common price from Seoul to Paris on a 13, 14-hour flight is $1,000 one way in T-Way's lie-flat business class. So because of that, of course, other airlines are being forced to compete. And T-Way flies to Singapore. They fly to Bangkok. So the competitive landscape has become very different, because even for airlines now that are offering connections, let's say Malaysia Airlines, like we were eyeing from Seoul to Singapore, well, who's going to book a connecting flight on Malaysia Airlines if it's not cheaper than the direct flight on T-Way Air, which is also in a lie-flat seat? So if T-Way is charging $400 one way direct on a 7-hour flight in business, well, unfortunately, the other airlines have to undercut that on a connection if they want anyone to book it, which is why we're ending up with, for example, Malaysia Airlines Business from Seoul for a 7-hour flight down to KL, then connecting to Singapore for about $380 in business class consistently, which is just absolutely wild. So I think we have low-cost airlines to thank. We have a more generally low-yield market, especially compared to Japan in Korea. Yeah. And hopefully it stays this way for a while so we can all enjoy some super cheap flights. I mean,
it's in the interest of the consumer, isn't it? It's you've also been very much across this.
And benefiting from it, so.
Well, you always like to benefit, don't you? Okay, I have a question here from Nikki. Nikki says, "Hi, Alex. Why do you sometimes say that the hub-and-spoke model is under threat? Hasn't it been under threat since mid-size wide-bodies like the 787 and A350 have been around? In my opinion, the hub-and-spoke model has returned big time since COVID ended. There will always be a market for connecting flights that are cheaper and more expensive direct flights." Flights. I think that's, it says "and," but I think it meant to say that. Basic principles of a free market, that is, the consumer gets to choose from multiple competitors' products, whichever one is the best for their needs. What are your thoughts on this? Nikki, I think that ties in nicely with everything Dan just explained, whereby the hub and spoke model is under threat if airlines are able to offer competitive non-stop options that don't involve a transit and, you know, in the fare war that we sometimes see in different regions of the world, if the non-stop option is able to either match or in some scenarios undercut the option by transit, then that plus the emergence of aircraft that are able to fly ultra long haul, that are able to operate with very few limitations in terms of the areas of the earth that they're able to cover and the vast distances that they operate across, then there is a threat to the whole concept of having passengers stop, transit, connect, and then continue on. I think that it's not a threat that is a threat to business now. I think it's not something that will see the end of hub and spoke, the concept of transiting via Singapore, via Hong Kong, via the Gulf, via Amsterdam, and all these places over the next few years. But generally, as aircraft can fly further and become increasingly capable, if the fares are able to keep up with what airlines are able to undercut with currently by transiting, then that does pose quite the threat to the profitability of operating in the hub and spoke dynamic. And I hope that answers your question. I think, Dan, you're aligned with that.
Yes, perfect answer. So on that note, we have to thank you guys for joining us this week. And we will see you all in the next video or in the next episode to answer all your questions. So we'll see you then on air. Bye-bye.
Have a nice flight. See you. Dan, did you just end the episode very, very suddenly? I had like 5 more questions to read out.
It's just getting extremely crowded. Like all of a sudden a wave of people came. So it's time to stop.
Time to wrap up. All right. Okay. Yeah. All right. We'll see you next
week.
Thank
you. Thank you.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you. even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.